Hi everyone, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Thea. Today, we will be speaking with Alyssa Grafton about her first book, Great Networking, The Art and Practice of Building Authentic Professional Relationships. Alyssa Grafton is a partner at the leading legal notaries firm, Depina Notaries, and assists law firms, investment banks, and multinationals to execute cross-border transactions. She is also active in female leadership and is a mentor for the Athena 40 Forum. Alyssa's book, Great Networking, provides proven advice on how to build relationships strategically that will last for the long term and will bring mutual benefits. At the same time, the author stresses the importance of you remaining true to yourself and your core beliefs. Thanks, Alyssa, very much for joining us today for Lit Radio Podcast. I'm really excited to speak with you about your new book, Great Networking. So my first question is, why did you decide to write the book?
Thank you very much, Dave, for inviting me to appear on the Lit Podcast today and to talk about my book. To your question on the reasons behind writing Great Networking, I will say that now I feel is the right time to talk about this subject of building relationships in the professional field. It's no secret that the quality of relationships that we have with people around us have profound effect on our overall happiness. But somehow, the same thought is not always applied to the relationships that we have with our work colleagues, with our contacts that we know, professional life, with clients. So with the people that who effectively we spend considerable amount of time with on the in a daily life. And now this is especially a pertinent point as we're coming out of the numerous lockdowns, out of the pandemic. We do not have perhaps the same, we have not had the same level of interactions with people outside of our households and immediate circles. So perhaps we are just starting to lose the skills of speaking to people who are not in our immediate social circles or establishing contacts with people that we do not know well. So putting these two things together, the need to form these relationships, to maintain them, and also perhaps a certain rustiness and being out of practice using the skills has really kind of been the real push behind my decision to write the book. And I especially had the new generation in mind when I was writing my book. I felt that my book is best suited to the audience of 20-somethings who are recently entering the professional field or who are considering to enter the professional field, perhaps currently studying or about to graduate. I felt that these skills are so of such paramount importance to the success of their future career and general overall happiness. That it's really worth dedicating time learning them quite early on in their career. But of course, the book is not limited to that audience.
Absolutely. And I really agree with what you said that now it's the right time to write about this subject. So yeah, the book is really timely at the moment. So let's move on to my second question. And here I want to cite the title of the second chapter in your book and ask you this question. Why does it feel so scary to network?
I'm very glad that you asked this question outright, Tay, because it really is scary, or it can be scary, to put yourself out there in an environment that is is unfamiliar. I often have the image of kind of sitting in your beloved comfy sofa at home, you know, relaxing after a hard day, and that being your the place of comfort for you, the place where you feel at ease, the place where you can relax, or your comfort zone, in other words. So networking often feels to me as sort of the, you know, I have this image of getting up from the this comfort zone, being enveloped in something that you feel really kind of provides you with this sense of safety, security, protection, and then kind of being catapulted into the situation, say, in, you know, outdoors in the wind and the rain, and the, surrounded by people that, or by unfamiliar faces, and, you know, still perhaps struggling to find your feet. So there are a lot of factors which are in the play, which actually determine the feeling, the sense of being out of your comfort zone, being actually pretty scary, you know, feeling even fear of facing these elements. So this is one of its aspects, but also the simple idea of being surrounded by people who are at the given, at that given moment, are strangers effectively. Now, if it raises all sorts of self-doubts. You know, it often feels like it kind of brings out all of these doubts about whether we are good enough, whether we would be accepted in this unfamiliar situation, whether we deserve being in the room, whether we are important enough to be spoken to, whether we are interesting enough to maintain a conversation. So it's this, you know, the second aspect really is, you know, it's almost sort of putting a magnifying glass to all of these self-doubts that a lot of us have, but networking is often a situation when these doubts would raise their ugly heads. And this, there is no surprise that this sense of fear, discomfort, is something that becomes very palpable. So although I reiterate, keep reiterating my book, that it is very natural for us, humanly natural for us to want to connect with others and to connect with others, this is not to say that per se, this is not a scary, uncomfortable, potentially uncomfortable experience. So I think it really needs to be accepted from quite early on that this is okay to feel all of these feelings and emotions, since people, you know, it's very universal for people to feel that. But this is not to say that all of, you know, the fear should really hold you back from taking yourself out there and putting yourself in a situation of meeting strangers and networking and really establishing connections.
Absolutely. I mean, I can absolutely relate to what you're saying, especially the part as someone coming from a foreign country. But I guess I think it's scary for anyone, no matter where you come from. So yeah, absolutely. I think anyone can relate to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then what I really loved about the book is that you don't just share tips, but you also share your experience and especially your failures in networking. So could you share some of them with us now and how they helped you become a better networker?
Yes, of course. I wanted to talk about all of these things that some people try to avoid mentioning, because I felt that it was important to talk about less pleasant things from the onset, as well as obviously advantages of forming relationships, you know, establishing these exciting, you know, relationships and connections that, you know, can enhance a person's career infinitely, as well as general happiness. But I also felt that it was paramount to talk about inevitable doing things not as perhaps we would in an ideal world do them. That is the reason behind candidly talking about my own personal less than perfect situations, social situations, you know, where I committed dreaded sins of every networker. And I'm not afraid to be specific. So just to share some with you, some of these failures with you very briefly, I think, you know, we all have our strengths and weaknesses. And in fact, I find that our weaknesses are just continuation of our strengths. So although I genuinely enjoy actually company of other people, even if I don't know them very well, and I enjoy talking, and sometimes I, especially in the past, I perhaps enjoyed talking too much at networking situations, and I would sort of go off on one and just carry on talking for 10 minutes about myself, about something that I found particularly interesting, I was passionate about at the time. And of course, actually it is a sin because it doesn't allow us to get to know the other person. So in networking situations, especially if you're nervous, if you are quite new to the whole context of networking, this is one of the, you know, such an easily committed scenes where you just kind of nervous blabber on about something, which is maybe entertaining, but it does not allow us the chance to get to know the other person. So listen ahead of talking. Be interested in another person ahead of talking. And this was the lesson for me from performing that failure probably one too many times. And, you know, something else that jumps to my mind is coming to an event, perhaps with a very kind of fixed idea of who it is that I need to meet, and not allowing myself the necessary spontaneity to perhaps get to know, be open to other new contacts, and do not have a very kind of rigidly preconceived idea that such and such is not as useful as perhaps the person that I had initially had in mind. So I felt that that was also very, very useless, really, technique, because it does not allow us, it does not allow for natural formation of connections with people who actually could play a considerable and important role in our lives. And also the third most occurred failure is coming to an event with either a colleague or bumping into someone that I knew and just spending a disproportionate amount of time talking to that person or to a group of people, or fleeting from a person that I know to the person that I know. And as much as it is nice in networking situations to catch up with familiar faces, that defeats the purpose of attending a room full of strangers, but strangers with potential. So this is, again, something we would often do at the start of our journey, because it's just so much easier to speak to someone that we know rather than someone that we do not. But it does, it actually defeats the whole purpose of being, engaging in stations where you have this unique opportunity. So it's a failure that I try not to repeat these days.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And it really shows that even the most successful people have failures, and that helps them grow and develop. So I really love that part in the book. So thanks very much for
sharing. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks very much for sharing that. But what are the skills that a great networker should possess?
Well, you know, this question I find quite difficult to answer, because inevitably, however kind of large and detailed my list is, there will be someone who would say, well, you've forgotten to include that, and you've forgotten to include this. And, you know, I should probably caveat the answer by saying that this is kind of, these are some of the things that I have found really helpful. I'm sure this is not an exhaustive list. And so, and also, you know, things would depend very much on the kind of circumstances. But let's see. So I, you know, who is a great networker? So a great networker is the person who finds it, you know, easily to connect with others. And then kind of creates the kind of relationships in the professional world, which allows the person to grow professionally, to help others grow professionally, and generally to create the kind of the network or the kind of the web of connections, which generally kind of spreads that success and positivity. So that is, in my eyes, someone who can be called a great networker. You can't connect with someone if you do not possess the ability to come across as a genuine person. And this is the reason for that is very simple. If you're not genuine, if you are not able to be authentic, then this is very easily sensed by others. It means that you're holding back. It means that you're pretending to be someone else, and people cannot connect to someone who does not show themselves. You know, if you do not show your authentic core values, basically something that separates you from everyone else in the world, then people will find it impossible to know what you stand for, what you are. And therefore would find it almost impossible to connect with you on the required level. I'm not saying deep level, but the required level for establishing a working and effective connection in the professional world. So authenticity, and again, I talk about this in the book, and I, if you know, describe the what authenticity actually means. Also, you know, a sense of humor. Incredibly important. No matter how impressive a person is, if they take themselves too seriously, then it will just become quite dull, boring, and they come across as kind of someone who just preaches. And so I think sense of humor is essential. It really warms up the others to you. And also it kind of brings out the other essential quality of a great networker, that humility shows that you're not afraid to kind of see yourself as a not perfect human being, and no one is perfect. So, you know, being able to kind of show yourself in that light is really very effective when connecting with others. I also think a certain sense of likability, you know, really very helpful. It's kind of, you know, some people refer to as being magnetic, having magnetic personality, having the charisma. But actually, I think that the likability factor is quite easily defined. And it's also something that can be developed. Again, in the book, I'll go into further details what it involves. But I personally do not believe that, although I agree that some people have naturally stronger charisma than others, I don't think that this actually needs to determine, you know, a person's presence or lack of likability for life. I think it's something that you can definitely build on. So I think probably this incomplete list, at least it kind of gives a beginning to understand what qualities a good networker should aspire to develop.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fascinating. And then another thing that you also talk about in the book is social capital. So could you let me know what social capital is and how does that influence your networking skills?
Sure. Social capital is such an interesting concept because, I mean, there are people who dedicate literally kind of theses and kind of lengthy essays and genuinely kind of, you know, philosophical works to the subject of social capital. So when I started kind of doing a little bit more research into the subject, I was really overwhelmed how much, you know, how much value it holds in the world. For example, and I give this quote in the book, for example, there was a research which was published by IMF in 2016, which suggested that in places where people have very different lifestyles, they see very little in common with each other, which makes sense. And it obviously leads to weak social capital, which almost certainly, and this is fascinating, which almost certainly reduces people's willingness to comply with, you know, government imposed measures. And some of these government imposed measures might well be very much needed, for example, such as those that we all kind of were required to comply with during the pandemic. So in actual fact, this research points to the reasons why the countries with stronger social capital have coped better under the pandemic restrictions and, you know, dealt better generally with the pandemic than the countries where that social capital wasn't as developed. So social capital, obviously the concept makes a huge difference in the society. But for the purposes of the book, I'm talking generally about, you know, social capital being really all of the connections that a person establishes in their life. And the point behind it is that to see all of the kind of connections that we have in life as something. So very often when, you know, when someone comes to or talks or thinks about networking, there is this idea that networking really is about going out there to meet important people in your life. Now, I feel very strongly against this because I think those who specifically go out just to network with a kind of the big cheeses of this world, that people with people who have the potential of making a difference in their professional career, I think these are the people, A, they're very easily recognizable, and, you know, they come across as sort of some, you know, something of a hawk in the networking world. Obviously, their lack of authenticity, because authenticity is not something on their kind of something on their agenda. And also they completely miss out on the whole point of viewing social capital, or viewing networking as kind of as an opportunity to develop your social capital, to build connections, which some of which may be very important, very valid right now. Others may be, you know, kind of indirectly be very kind of productive and bring in further connections, kind of catapulting you into kind of new projects later on. And others may kind of actually not seem very, very important at this given moment, but they are something that's well worth nurturing and nourishing, because you never know how and when these people, you know, would be that essential link between where you are and where you want to be. So the point behind the social capital in the book is exactly that. I wanted for the mindset of the reader to be focused on the importance of viewing all of the connections that you make. They make throughout their life, throughout their professional life, throughout their personal life, as part of their social capital. And social capital is always worth investing into.
Absolutely, I think that's a very interesting concept, because you never know how people, you know, people you've met in the past can help you. So yeah.
Exactly, yep. Exactly that. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. All right, so my next question is, how do we become good networkers if we're introverts? And something interesting that I read in the book is that you're saying that probably most of us think that the best networkers are the extroverts, but in reality, that's not the case most of the time. So could you tell us, how do we become good networkers if we're introverts?
Yeah, Steya, you are up, you know, up the opposite, you're right. You know, this is something that I've mentioned in a book once or twice, because I felt that there was a very important kind of challenging point to make. You know, again, if you if you try and embody the image of a in your mind of a great network, you probably think of someone who fearlessly, you know, most confidently kind of enters the room, you know, have the kind of charisma that make that makes everyone want to look at him or her, and, you know, then, so, you know, very confidently walks up to the most important person in the room at just the right time, kind of stretches their arm and kind of begins this very, you know, very skillfully led conversation, which ultimately leads to an offer of a job, for example. Well, this is obviously, you know, not the case. So there are people out there like that, and it takes, at least my experience, it takes a huge amount of failures. It takes a huge amount of kind of trial and errors to get to that point. And sometimes, you know, as a good networker, you have those days, sometimes you don't. But, you know, the idea that is the person who kind of embraces the room, you know, loves to interact with others, kind of, you know, takes a huge pleasure in the attention that's kind of that's you know, and lapping up that attention that comes to him or her. You know, that idea to me is just quite flawed, because a lot of the times extroverts are people who kind of find energy in being in the company of others. And then I appreciate that this is a very simplistic definition of an extrovert, and the one which is probably open to a lot of criticism, but just for the purposes of this podcast, you know, let's call that. But the idea that that person becomes a really good networker is flawed, because this is, you know, they kind of misses out on the hugely important point. A great networker is someone who is interested first and foremost in not what they have to say, but on what others have to say. The person who has complete, who has others in their focus, who wants to know what the other person in front of him or her say, and genuinely pay, you know, a lot of attention and interest to that, you know, with genuine, authentic curiosity. And although obviously you can have this, or you can do all of this as a your classic extrovert, as in my experience, at least, introverts who kind of can bring themselves to be in the company of others, even if just for an hour or two, actually make some of the best networkers, because they have this ability to, you know, they probably more often than not are kind of, you know, on the listening end, and, you know, they have this ability to absorb the information and kind of, you know, really interested in the or listen to what the other person has to say, because they don't have this compulsion to, you know, talk or kind of, you know, to engage too robustly with others. So in my experience, someone who is prepared to absorb and prepared to kind of, you know, take the room in rather than take the room on, often becomes a better network and establishes really stronger connections from the word go. There may be less connections, granted, but often they are stronger. And I think it's really worth exploring that concept behind being someone other than an extrovert, your classical extrovert, and really developing yourself as a kind of a great network. And I'm talking about this in book in more detail, because I thought it was a very important concept to relay.
Absolutely, and I was really fascinated when I read that actually introverts are probably the people who who make better networkers, because you would always expect the opposite.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, it was really fascinating to read about that. All right, so moving on to another topic that you cover in the book, small talk. Mm. So you say that small talk is really important and that it can lead to more meaningful conversations. So could you explain why it is so important and why we should use it in our networking?
Sure. So small talk is often viewed as kind of something that this inevitability, especially in England, apparently it's, you know, it's viewed as one of the things that you do because the weather is so horrendous, apparently. And then, you know, you kind of enter the room and just chat about how badly it rained over the last few days, or for that matter, you know, what a wonderful summer we're having, or unusually warm spring, etc., etc. And as much as I think, so small talk needs to be distinguished from icebreaking conversation. An icebreaker is indeed something very lighthearted, you know, conversation that you have about whatever topic you choose to talk about. You know, some people really enjoy talking about the weather. There is nothing wrong about it. I think it's a great topic, because although people can hold different opinions on the weather, it also kind of can lead to further discussions about, you know, their backgrounds, kind of, you know, their geographical location, etc. So it's quite, you know, innocuous topic to talk about as an icebreaker. Now, small talk actually is something a little bit deeper, and it's basically an icebreaker taken to a new level. Small talk is an opportunity to find out, and should be used as an opportunity to find out more about the person who stands in front of you. You know, an icebreaking comment about the weather could lead to that person saying, well, actually, you know, where I come from, it normally is a lot hotter or a lot colder during this month. Great. And then it's an opportunity for you to find out more about the person, where the person comes from. Just the fact that they mentioned it so early on in the conversation means that it matters to them. And so on. It kind of can be used as an opportunity to find out more about the person who stands in front of you. Not as a nervous kind of, you know, just nervous chit chat that you have just to get over the initial nerves and, you know, allow for this first two sips of whatever drink that you hold in your hand, but as an opportunity to find out more. And all too often it's a missed opportunity. That is why I felt the need to kind of develop that topic in my book.
Absolutely. I think it was fascinating as well. Moving back to being to fears and being scared to network, I think one of the main reasons that people are scared to network is the fear of rejection.
Mm.
So great. How can we overcome that fear?
This is a really deep topic, actually, rejection, because it's says so much about us before it says so much about the situation. Rejection generally is so scary because it's often viewed as an opportunity, and I'm specific purposefully using the word opportunity, because even though it kind of it's not positive opportunity, but opportunity nonetheless, to reconfirm everything that we fear we may be viewed as. So it's not the actual fact of being rejected in the social scenario that scares us so much, but learning what we, or kind of seeing in the other person's eyes what we have feared we may be viewed as. So rejection, in other words, rejection kind of is like holding a mirror to your face, but this is, you know, not the mirror, not the usual mirror where we kind of see the familiar features, but the mirror was slightly different angle. So it, you know, that is why rejection can be so incredibly painful. I also know that rejection is very much, you know, well, we all know that the rejection is very much part of daily life. You know, those who, like the saying goes, you know, if you don't love, you don't get hurt. But what is a life lived without love? And in a similar context with networking, what is you know, if you don't go out, if you don't take yourself out there, you don't get rejected. But what is life without an opportunity to take yourself out into the unknown situation and stand the chance of making really interesting, enriching context, perhaps, you know, not just professionally, but also on a personal level. Think the fact, the risk of being rejected is worth it. Now, I don't think you know, you should kind of swallow rejection necessarily. And I think rejection needs to be dealt with. It needs to be kind of lived through, yes, but kind of not always take or really shouldn't be taken personally, because I make a very strong statement in a book about this. Rejection is always about the reason why you're rejected is almost never about you. And it's almost always about the agenda of the other person, at least in a networking scenario. I mean, it has to be pretty kind of damn obvious reason for the kind of for that to be about the rejected person. It's often, you know, that the person who is being rejected is just not kind of featuring on the agenda of the other networker. So there are so many reasons why, very real reasons why rejection should not be seen at taken on a personal level. But the fear of rejection should be understood and not kind of not be allowed to hold us back, because, you know, the values that we take out are a lot more important than the potential hurt.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely agree with that. All right. In the book, you also discuss how social media is allowing us to get in touch with people around the world 24/7, which really sounds like we're more connected than at any other time in human history. However, you also observe that a high level of disconnection and social anxiety is caused exactly by this social communication. And also during the COVID-19 pandemic and all the multiple lockdowns that we all went through, we were forced to self-isolate and communicate mostly online. So do you think that has affected our ability to network effectively?
Absolutely. The short answer to this question, absolutely. Social media is very interesting phenomenon of the modern life, because, you know, the world social kind of lets you think that this is, you know, by kind of engaging in social media, you actually develop your social skills. And, you know, I'm definitely the one who enjoys many aspects of having kind of being on social networks. I stay in touch. Not in close touch, but in touch nonetheless with friends that are now spread all over the world. We kind of keep tab on what each other are doing, you know, posting some images, photographs, kind of comments. I think this is all great. Now, what it shouldn't be seen as a substitute for personal contact, because however kind of genuine, authentic, you know, no filter posts we aspire to produce, there are nonetheless an illusion. So, you know, you may be the kind of person who actually posts pictures of their breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but even that would be an angle of your breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, you wouldn't, for example, show the picture, kind of the photograph of the kitchen where that breakfast, lunch, and dinner was produced. So the point behind that is that it's a kind of a one look into someone's life, and in no way it should be viewed as representation, an authentic representation of that life. The only way we can actually socially, you know, genuinely, authentically engage is by having a conversation. Now, it can be virtual conversation, there's nothing wrong with that. But this is almost impossible to have, you know, on a social media platform. It should be viewed for what it is. An ability for us to, as I said, you know, to stay connected with those who are kind of not in our immediate surroundings, but in no way should be viewed as a substitute. And I think that, you know, the problem starts when people kind of think, well, you know, I'm kind of very active on all the social media platforms, on many of them, and therefore every place is really having a proper social circle. But oftentimes it actually prevents or makes people lose their kind of naturally developed, naturally acquired, and naturally, you know, the skills that they naturally possess, the skills that allow us to communicate and to build relationships, you know, on the kind of on the deeper levels, the kind of relationship, the only relationship that really are, you know, kind of worth having in our life. So don't, I think, you know, the issue is not to kind of substitute one for another, but to see one as a pain, maybe stepping stone to another, but that other is nonetheless worth kind of, you know, aspiring to have.
Yeah, but how do we network effectively virtually? Because let's be honest, some of our communications will stay online even after the pandemic. So how do we really network effectively online?
Yes, and you know, this is you're spot on. So virtual virtual networking, you know, virtual communication is here to stay. Even with the pandemic, hopefully finally kind of fading away, wouldn't it be wonderful just to kind of virtually have a chat with someone who is kind of located on the other side of the globe? But you know, this is kind of, you know, social friendships, or you know, your personal friendships. It doesn't necessarily have to have a script to it, an agenda. You just communicate in whichever way you find best. But when it comes to virtual networking, what I have found, and again, that this is really, you know, my personal experience. Other people may have differing experience, but what I have found is that in order to have the experiences through virtual network that emulate as close as possible face-to-face experiences, you really need to plan. So I'd say actually plan. So unlike in the physical room where you can, yes, you know, sometimes you can kind of decide to, you know, be spontaneous and just kind of drift from a person to person. Or sometimes you can kind of have a list of people that you really need to speak to, but you can't really have that spontaneity during virtual networking. But to get the most out of connections, you basically need to find out who it is that you are looking to meet through a virtual networking session. A plan to find out more about that person. So have a plan to be introduced to them or introduce yourself to them. So I think it just has to be a lot more, you have to be a lot more disciplined when doing virtual networking. And I think it can still be an incredibly important platform for future connections, but just kind of do not view it with as much kind of freedom to be spontaneous as you would being in a virtual room. So plan. And there is a chapter in the book where I talk about, again, my experience with virtual networking and what it has taught me. So I hope that the reader will find it useful.
Yeah, absolutely. And the tips that you just shared, I think, are really useful as well. So yeah, we need to plan.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so my last question for you is, what are your top three tips for great networking?
My top three tips for great networking are find out as much as possible about yourself. So there is a chapter in the book that actually is dedicated to knowing your purpose. And I call it, that's the secret behind every successful network. So know what it is that, where it is that you want to get to. So your purpose, find out what matters to you, what motivates you, what leads you in life or in a particular project. Know your purpose and work with the purpose in mind. Very, very important. So it's more about kind of your generic purpose than kind of a purposeful kind of purposefully attacking people at a networking event, but, you know, just be purposeful where you want to get to in life on what matters to you. Second thing, be, you know, aim to be authentic. You know, it's very, very important. You cannot connect with another human being if you are too afraid to be yourself. You know, we're all flawed. None of us are perfect, but just kind of be authentic. Don't be afraid to be yourself. Don't be afraid to show yourself as you are. And my third tip is listen. So important to be interested in another person. Stay curious. Listen. I think that kind of the focus on curiosity, the focus on another person, the focus on becoming interested in what it is that they have to say, is really often the distinction between being successful in the conversation and kind of falling behind and just thinking about the next thing to say.
I think that these were really good tips. Thank you very much, Elisa, for the tips and for the whole conversation. I think it was really insightful and interesting discussion. So thanks very much for joining us.
Well, I'm very glad to hear it. And thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And thanks everyone for listening. Don't forget to keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, and at Lit Business Media on LinkedIn for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.